Commissioner Enlow is not in attendance, either by phone or in person, and Commissioner Vile is not in attendance. Who else are we missing? Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Mills and Commissioner Bartholomew. But we, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we have a quorum. Commissioner Lockwood, Commissioner Wellner, Commissioner Erstat, Commissioner Beatty, and Commissioner Bertillo are in attendance. So with that, if we could have the staff report from Mr. Back or...
Thank you. First thing I want to mention is when John Floyd, some of you remember him, left us, he was the Planning Commission liaison for staff in the interim. Teresa has been doing that, but has kind of been doing double duty. But I want to introduce, for those of you who don't know him, Todd Borkowitz. Can you stand up, Todd? Todd's an associate planner who joined us in October, I believe, and so he's going to be the new Planning Commission liaison. So there's administrative things that I know you've been working with Susan on, but he's going to be kind of the Fred Meyer of kind of one-stop shopping for all your needs. So he's a
If there is an administrative request, so far it's been sort of, particularly if it's done by email, it's been communicated to Teresa and to Susan.
Right.
And we would, and Todd would be in that loop.
Correct.
And if necessary, copying you.
Right.
Good. Welcome, Todd.
Just want to go over the meeting schedule a little bit. Today you'll hear Ordinance 851 about TSP amendments on the 19th. We have a work session on recreational marijuana status report, which was distributed yesterday. Actually, Todd will do that work session presentation. And also Ordinance 853, you'll have a hearing on related to plan development standards and related to their particular open space requirements.
Is this all today?
No, that's...
I'm sorry.
That's next.
Oh, next.
That's on the 19th.
Okay, I'm just sorry. I was looking at the wrong agenda.
On the 10th of July, and again, we changed those dates because of the 4th, you'll hear an ordinance on some of the technical code fixes and the telecommunication changes. And on the 24th, Baker Rock Quarry will be in front of you, and Aloha Tomorrow. So I think the 24th will be the biggest meeting in terms of two rather meaty topics. And then into August, you'll...
And how many public hearings are there that day? Two?
Two, unless you continue things from the 10th. But both could be somewhat contentious. We'll see. Hopefully not. Then we have other things scheduled into August. So just be aware that we're full up through August. And we
does that include both the first and the last meeting in August as well?
Correct.
Okay.
So we know summer. You have lives, so just keep us informed when you're not going to be here.
Well, it's just good to know for the August 2 meetings that, you know, if we can, or I know I'm going to try to be sure.
Right. That's how it's. We in a month, we may know more, and sometimes things shift around, but right now that's what we're planning. The last thing I want to tell you about is the board did adopt engrossed Ordinance 846. That was the North Bethany one that you heard earlier this year. So they took action on that recently. And so we're already getting some interest from the development community on that one in terms of filing potential applications. So with that, you've the board has already adopted 5 ordinances this year.
Are you referring to the North Bethany, the business district ordinance?
Right, the Main Street, right. And with that, I don't have anything else, but can entertain questions if you have it.
Folks, are there any follow-up questions for staff? I have one. I mentioned to Mr. Becker a couple days ago or last week. It doesn't need a lengthy explanation, but I just, since we don't sit in on the legislative updates or receive any from what's happening in Salem, what is the status of the House Bill 2001 that would address reduce or allow downzone single family, or however you want to look at it? But it's a landmark type of legislation, and I just think it'd be useful to know what the status is. I heard it's in committee and it's coming out with amendments, maybe. That's about right. All I know.
I was not there for the actual legislative review. I don't know if looking at Teresa, whose head's down right now. I will note that once that, assuming it looks like something's going to get passed, but it will impact the Planning Commission in terms of having to do something about it probably next year.
Okay.
So once it gets, assuming it gets adopted, we'll have a briefing on it, just a heads up, just to tell you what's in it. But
maybe that would be best. Maybe if it makes
don't want to speculate because
no,
it's going to happen.
There's a lot of so perhaps once the session ends, maybe we could have what the final bill or law, what the implications are.
Right.
What we have to do,
right.
As well as explain to the planning commissioners what exactly it is. I don't, it's a fairly technical
right.
land use bill. So
I think there's value in once the session's over, and also having a briefing on, or at least just a brief overview of any other land use related things that passed, just so you're up to speed on those.
Well, without any further questions, this is the period of oral communications, and I don't have anyone signed up. And since I'm looking at the friendly staff faces, I will assume there is no one present for making any comments not related to an item on the agenda, which would roll us into our next order of business, which is staff report on ordinance 851, a transportation system plan update, which would be followed by a public hearing. And I believe Mr. Valentine and Mr. Kelly will present. Keeping in mind, we did have a presentation or semi-work session at the last meeting, or the meeting before, I can't remember. So, the last meeting, so.
Good afternoon, commissioners. As you noted, I'm Steve Kelly. I have with me Diami Valentine. We're both senior planners with Department of Land Use and Transportation, and we're here today to give the staff report on proposed ordinance number 851. I'll lead off, and Mr. Valentine will continue, and then I'll finish up for us. So proposed ordinance 851 is outlined on the slide in front of you here. It has five areas of change in the transportation system plan, and those are all included in Exhibit 1 of the ordinance, and also has Exhibit 2, which has several modifications to Section 408 of the Community Development Code. So there are, the first section of the transportation changes includes adjustments to the functional classification map. These amendments were requested by the cities of Banks and Cornelius. Staff report does contain two potential engrossments. These are shown in the staff report as well as here, and I'll direct your attention to the one on the left. There is in both the Washington County plan as well as the Forest Grove and Cornelius plan an alignment of a collector north of 24th Avenue that connects between Forest Grove and Cornelius. And in discussions with Forest Grove staff, they've identified that it really is not a constructible location for a collector. It was originally put on their plan by Forest Grove, and we, in coordinating between the two cities, recommended realigning it to the location shown, and then have subsequently realized that there's really no way to build a collector through there. And Forest Grove staff have requested that we remove the connection until they, for now, until they figure out where or if to proceed with a connection north of 24th through that area. The second was simply a mapping error on our part. We had two versions of the geographic information system files, and one showed 13th and the other showed 14th, and we showed 13th and we should have showed 14th Avenue. Picked the wrong version of the file. And so we caught the error, and the collector should have been identified on 14th, consistent with the city of Cornelius's plan. There's also the second section addresses active transportation. These amendments facilitate staff moving forward with the transit master plan and also with the enhanced priority transit priority treatments that TriMet is coordinating with TriMet on those types of signal timing and other priority types of treatments. Mr. Valentine will get into that a little bit further on here. Also, there is a change to the pedestrian element of the plan, which would include the trail alignment. I believe it's called the Laurel Woods Trail. That was adopted by the city of Cornelius with their transportation system plan update. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Valentine.
Thank you, Vice Chair and Commissioners. This the transit element is probably the meatiest portion of this proposed ordinance, and I wanted to provide a little bit of background as well as talk about some of the specific revisions proposed or amendments proposed in the ordinance. First, just a brief little background about the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund, or otherwise known as STIF. And then the element really is kind of a phased approach, this being kind of an interim fix for the TSP. We probably envision coming back next year with some additional amendments since we've been working on a number of kind of transit-related projects over the last couple years. And as Steve mentioned, the transit master plan that we'll be undergoing over in the next year. So background about the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund. This is was an element of the House Bill 2017, which established the fund. It has a dedicated source for transit. It is a 0.1% statewide employee payroll tax. And these revenues are dedicated to be used for providing transit service to low-income populations, as well as to reduce fragmentation of service providers throughout Oregon. The legislation identified or designated TriMet as what is the qualified entity for the Tri-County region and for the purpose of administering, receiving, and distributing funds for the region. It also identified Washington County as a service provider for transit, specifically for areas that are outside of TriMet and the South Metropolitan Transit Service Area, or SMART. They, TriMet had to adopt a plan to allocate the funds for service investments for fiscal year 19 through 21, and that was adopted by the TriMet Board in 2018 and subsequently the Oregon Transportation Commission in March of 2019. Washington County, in order to be eligible to receive those funds, had to go through a planning process. We convened a advisory committee to identify and prioritize projects, and for an estimated, to receive the estimated funds of about $250,000 a year, and these funds are dedicated to areas outside, again, outside TriMet and SMART's district. Oops. The projects that were identified for kind of the rural portions of Washington County, as well as some of the regional shuttle, first and last mile shuttle services that are currently being provided in Forest Grove, Tualatin, and North Hillsboro. So the dedicated funds continue and maintain and as well as expand those services. They also identified continuing and expanding demand response services that are currently provided by Ride Connection, as well as providing better coordination with interregional services. And those are services that are outside the county that come into, so for example, the WAVE. I have a map that illustrates kind of what those services are, but trying to better coordinate and support those services as well. So into the elements that are considered as part of the proposed ordinance, a lot of these amendments were really focused on making consistent the terminology that's being used at a regional level in terms of planning. So the revised objective is more or less, it's pretty much exactly the terminology that's being used at the regional level for the regional transportation plan. Some of the strategies that were revised are were done so to, again, kind of reflect the new role that the county has to a certain extent. In this case, it's really 8.5.4, just acknowledging that there's first and last mile service. So I think the previous version of the TSB only had last mile connection, so it's minor revision, but important to acknowledge that. 8.5.5 again reflects the priority for better interregional coordination based on the funding source. 8.5.6 again is just a revision of an existing strategy. This one is more kind of enabling to reflect that there might be services that could provide this on-demand mobility, similar to what Lyft Paratransit is currently offering. So in the future, if there was a service model, for example, coordinating with a Lyft or an Uber or somebody like that, this would, it would not prohibit that potential coordination. Then there are a couple new strategies. These are, again, reflective of the new role the county has in terms of being a service provider and enabling the county to develop and implement a transit master plan. And this is really to guide investments that are reflected in the what is unfortunately referred to as the PTIP. That's the near-term investments that are funded through HB 2017. And it is just dedicated to, or the master plan will focus on the rural area as well as those regional coordination first and last mile shuttles. And then a new strategy to continue to secure and identify additional funding sources to maintain those services that the county is now an element of continuing to provide those services. And new strategy, this one is, as Mr. Kelly mentioned, TriMet is, and the region is interested in seeing kind of what's it called, enhanced transit concepts, so spot treatments to improve transit speed and reliability. And so this is an effort to acknowledge that we have a role in coordinating and supporting that effort. And then there were a number of edits to the, or updates to the map to reflect adopted plans. The last round back in 2014, TriMet was kind of just finishing up their Southwest Service Enhancement Plan, and there were some assumptions that were made in there that we may have misrepresented, or they kind of modified after the fact. And so we were, as part of this process, we're bringing in line with what those plans reflect, as well as what has been incorporated as part of like the Southwest Corridor and other service enhancements around or that were identified through this HB 2017 funding program and the additional interregional bus services. And let's see, as we note, there may be future amendments that may come forward to the Planning Commission and the board next year following the Transit Master Plan development. This is just a map that illustrates the number of different types of services that are interregional services that are coming into the and through the county. And so it's fairly extensive. And we have a small part to play to make sure everybody's playing well together. So in this, you see Yamhill County Transit Area has, there's two lines that come in, one from McMinnville up through Gaston into the Hillsborough Transit Center, another one up 99W into Tigard. There is a loop that is called the West Link that connects Forest Grove, Banks, North Plains to Hillsborough. That is a service that we is incorporated into and we're funding as part of the HB 2017 funding. So we're seeking to expand that service. Tillamook provides the WAVE. I think they have a number, maybe three or four or five round trips per day between Tillamook and downtown Portland, and there's points they connect to Banks as well as Tannisborn. CC Rider, which comes in from Columbia County, has two connections at PCC Rock Creek as well as the Willow Creek Transit Center. And then the point goes from Astoria to downtown Portland. And I think we also identify in there the different connections with SMART. We wanted to highlight there's obviously more than this in the ordinance, but just a few worth noting of map changes. This reflects on the left-hand side, added service on Cornelius Pass Road. That was not previously there. This is a service that is actually committed as part of the HB 2017 funds, as well as service on the right-hand side, which reflects service enhancement to the line 20 to frequent service. So it's not only routes, but also frequency that's reflected in the Transit Master Plan.
So that's South Hillsborough, south of TV Highway, right?
Correct.
Why are they so quickly getting frequent bus service in North Bethany? Can't get it at all?
Well, I think this one is actually, it's the line 47, it won't be frequent service. I think it's just regular bus service. And then North Bethany does actually have, it's served by about three lines, not north of Springville Road, but that area is certainly serviced by transit. And I know we've had some conversations. It's been identified, and off the top of my head, I don't know if we included it in the ordinance, but as a potential area for first and last mile shuttle to serve north of Springville Road. And we will be doing some assessment as part of a kind of a countywide transit study to do some further evaluation on what type of service is best warranted to provide transit service for north of Springville Road.
You do any, Intel doesn't offer any shuttles from there, from that area, do they?
No, they only provide a shuttle to Orenco Station currently.
Is there any
in the fairgrounds, actually.
Can you do any outreach or polling to find out if it would get utilized?
Yeah, I think that's a valid, I mean, those are certainly things to consider as part of a scope for our countywide transit study. We could include some kind of public engagement process, potentially.
Yeah, there's just a large mass of people that live in one spot all going to the same place.
So mm-hmm.
We can get them all there in less than one person per car.
And then just one more map change worth noting. This was Ms. Manso provided some testimony, and within that testimony, she had a couple suggestions about some transit needs, including providing service in North Bethany. But we just wanted to note that there was one of her suggestions was providing service between Sunset and PCC Rock Creek, and there is actually in the TSB currently there is that vision for that type of service. The only edit that is reflected in the ordinance is on the left-hand side. You see just a changed from Kaiser. It was on Kaiser to Laidlaw, so it was just a minor revision. So I'll now turn it back to Mr. Kelly to wrap things up, and we'll answer any questions following the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Valentine. So moving on to Exhibit 2, if we're ready to take on the second exhibit, that was the covered the Exhibit 1 material. Exhibit 2 has a couple of changes to Section 408 of Neighborhood Circulation. And really, these changes are intended to proactively consider access management during the development process and review that properties can take appropriate access from neighborhood type connections rather than direct connections to arterials and collectors where they don't meet the current standards. So I have a couple of diagrams to sort of, it didn't all fit on the page, but it's close, sort of demonstrate how this would work. So this is a made-up, fictitious example, but it's based on a couple others that we've had come through of what is what we're intending to do with this. So this is a proposed existing configuration where the adjacent property would be unable to ever meet the current spacing standard, and there's no way to provide an alternative except through the adjacent properties. And that's I'm referring to the property in the center there that's less than the arterial spacing or collector spacing standard. And so then this would be the configuration that would be required afterwards, or an example of one, where the developing property in this example would need to address the access to the adjacent property so that in the future, when the adjacent property does proceed to develop, they can take access that is consistent with our access spacing standard. And that's the entirety of the proposed changes to the Community Development Code, and sort of gave you a couple examples there to explain it in a little more detail.
How is this any different than the way you guys already apply this section 408?
I think this is how we intend Section 408 to operate today, and the material in Exhibit 2 is intended to clarify this is the intent of those neighborhood circulation requirements. It came up that it wasn't necessarily clear that this kind of required access was the intent in some circumstances, so we're following up on that.
Does this make it any more restrictive? Does it now force, does it take away any of the flexibility that we had where it was necessary?
I think it clarifies that the access road to the adjacent property would be required in these circumstances. I think it would depend upon the circumstances. If it changes the flexibility for the developer or the adjacent property, I can think of different examples where it could work out different ways, and I don't know it generally if it would change flexibility in significantly overall. But
what if that adjacent property was a, so you've got the square on the left that you now have 12 lots. The square to the right of that is the same size, but what if it was smaller? What if it was a three-lot partition? The square on the left, under today's standards, can, if you didn't have to extend the street, could be developed with a private street. If you do have to extend the street to service the neighboring property, then it automatically triggers it having to be a public street. Is Section 408 going to, these changes to 408 going to make it any, like if it is only a three-lot partition on that neighboring property, am I going to have to convert that private street to a public street and extend it all the way through, or is there some proportionality thought process that goes into it?
Well, it doesn't get into proportionality. The whether it's a private or public street, I think, would depend upon the size and scale of the lot, as you correctly note, the size and scale of the adjacent property. I think it, in this case, potentially could be either.
Our planning staff typically says that if you have to extend your street to and through, and it needs to serve a neighboring property, that it has to be a public street more often than not. Every now and again, you can get away with it being a private, but that's an exception.
I think the proposal that kind of triggered us to look at this a little harder actually resulted in a private street. But regardless of that, the intent here wasn't to change the nature of the connection that would be required, or the intent would be to continue to have similar requirements that would provide the access to the adjacent property, and it wouldn't change the other aspects of the code.
Okay, I guess can that be clarified for current plan? I mean, I'm trying to make sure that we're not losing something here. If this is just intended to clarify the way things are currently applied, and today, when there's an outstanding circumstance, I know that current planning, along with Jindy and company, have the ability to provide some flexibility. I don't want to take that away. So providing some clarity to them to say, hey, we're just codifying the way you guys currently do it. We're not trying to take anything away from you would be helpful, I guess, on my end.
Yeah, I've worked extensively on the language with current planning staff to get to this point, and that, I believe, is clear with those discussions. And if you have changes to the language, I'm all ears about how to frame that in such a way that it continues the same general requirements and clarifies those so that the access point, access management is continues.
Okay.
I have a question kind of on the same vein. Can you go back a slide, though?
Absolutely.
So I was thinking that the developing property on the left, I was thinking you were going to put one house on it. Okay. And then the adjacent property, I assumed it didn't have a house, I guess. This is what I was thinking when I saw this. But would this be, if you're just going to put one house, then you have to give a driveway to the adjacent property?
The provision of one house on an existing lot of record would not trigger these requirements.
Okay, so how many triggers it then?
I think this goes to at least the subdivision level, which would be more than four.
More than three, right? Subdivision is more than three, right?
Oh, four or more. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So it wouldn't kick in until it was a subdivision.
I believe that's the intent of 408. I'd have to research that, but that's my understanding today.
Okay. Okay, it might be good to check because it doesn't seem fair if there's just one house that they got to get a driveway through their backyard.
Understood. The intent wasn't to change the nature of the neighborhood circulation requirements in 408. If those requirements are in place, then this would kick in, but not until the neighborhood circulation requirements are something they have to deal with.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
I guess I'm trying to understand if this is the way we've always applied it, then in what was the circumstance where what we had didn't work?
We had a case, actually two, but one that came up where there was some resistance to this and the clarification was requested by current planning staff.
Okay, is that the one in Garden, was that in Garden Home?
It was.
Okay, and the neighboring property was a smaller property and they wanted a connection for ultimately like a little two-lot partition?
We wanted to have the connection in place for when and if the adjacent property decided to redevelop or develop.
Okay. So this provides clarity that the current planning staff can continue to ask for that?
Exactly.
Okay. Can this also provide clarity that that street can be a public or a private?
I think that'd be a different decision-making process than the neighborhood circulation code gets into, and I can look into that and get back to you.
Well, it would be helpful to just know that you still have that option and that you're not, because right now it's okay, we have a problem, we'll let you do the private street in this circumstance. More often than not, it's you're going to extend it to and through, and therefore it has to be public. And it has been that way for a long, 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 long time. So if we're going to be more stringent now about making sure that you're going to take your road through to service the adjacent property, then maybe we should be rethinking about that general policy.
It's a good idea. I'd have to discuss that with current planning staff. I don't have that knowledge in my expertise at this point. So my understanding is it wouldn't change the nature of the road that would be required, just clarify that, you know, continue to manage the access to the arterial and provide those opportunities for access where there aren't any now. To be provided by, you know, something consistent with our spacing standard through development on the adjacent property. Was that clear? I can try again if it wasn't.
No, I think so. I it's clear, but what's crazy to me is this is the way we've always done it. So, like, why all of a sudden do we need this change because of this one-off? And that's what.
I have a question similar. So
if I can helpfully clarify a little bit, the sort of the problem was the adjacent property. Since the adjacent property wasn't subject to 408, that's where the current language doesn't really, it isn't clear. So it was clear that the developing property had to meet 408. And there are block size considerations, so you have to meet the block size consideration. And sometimes we've forced streets to be stubbed into properties because otherwise you don't meet the block size. But not always is it clear that you had to stub properties into adjacent properties if that other property wouldn't be able to ultimately meet the access spacing standards. That's not clear in 408. And that's what the applicant argued, that show me where in 408, even though that was the practice, that you had to do this, and so that's why we're clarifying. It's not so much the developing property, it gets less clear about those adjacent properties.
Away staff's ability to say you don't have to extend it through. Does this language now say, so what if that adjacent property was a half acre and it had a $1 million house on it, and, right. and it was very unlikely that that street extension was ever going to be necessary?
Right.
Does this take away staff's ability to say, no, you don't need to make that extension because it doesn't make sense that it's ever going to be needed?
There are definitions on what properties are redevelopable. And so if it was deemed not to be redevelopable, it wouldn't be required.
It seems like in the language there should be exceptions. Either change it and say exceptions could be X, or two, if you're changing the language and changing the policy because of one application that didn't meet everything, why not keep it as is and just say exceptions could be X? It seems like a lot to change everything because one case scenario didn't fit exactly in how the language was written.
I'm digging up the proposed language right now in the actual ordinance, which sort of lays out when and where that would be necessary. Section three in both locations in code 408 defines if a property is considered redevelopable for this section. It has two elements, one for residential and one for commercial, industrial, or institutional zoning. And if the adjacent property in residential districts is what I think you're referring to, the ability to partition, so I was misspoke, partition, subdivide, or add attached dwelling units within the minimum density standards. So it's if that adjacent property could redevelop and add units, then the proposed connection would then be required.
The addition of an ADU in somebody's backyard?
It could.
What about
ADUs are type 1 decisions, so I don't think that would be the case.
What about a tiny house?
You'd have to go through a type 2 process. So anything that, parcelization or subdividing the land, but if it's on a lot of record, you're just adding a ADU or tiny house or cottage unit, whatever we end up with, you wouldn't be subject to that. And we haven't provided it in the ordinance itself, but if you go, there's actually more pages to that section where we have the standards where we can modify the standards, and there's a series of criteria that you can go through to do that.
Chair Petrillo brought up 2001 earlier, which, if depending upon how we address missing middle housing, could basically take all these single family lots and allow duplexes on them, or if you guys wanted to allow fourplexes on them. So that could theoretically mean that every single lot that you're adjacent to anywhere in Washington County, you would have to extend a street through to service if you were to add a missing middle unit on your property. So I'm just not, I understand, I think, what you're getting at here. I'm just not sure that we've, and it might seem like it's not that big of a deal, but have we thought through it well enough to really know that it's not that big of a deal? Especially with 2001 in play.
I think that's a valid question to raise. So, yeah. I don't know what action to recommend, but I think the point is that 2001, how this relates to what may be coming down the pike in terms of code changes, whether it's cluster or middle housing ordinances this cycle, or whether it's changes that are made next year relative to or in relation to 2001. I think this issue is going to come up, and maybe it has to be, maybe we'll be re-amending it at that time.
Can we table it?
I don't think it would, I think the question Commissioner Beatty raised just right out of me was, can we table it or defer it? You mean just this part of it?
Right.
And, you know, what is staff's opinion on that? I mean, it seems like even if it moves forward as it is, it seems like there's no harm or you know, and that if there needed to be a change, a subsequent change as things, other factors come into play, it could be changed again. But that right now there's a gap of inconsistency at the current planning level. Is that correct? Summary?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Right. And, but the idea of providing this additional clarification, is there any, you know, negative ramification of doing so, particularly when we don't know exactly what is forecast for middle housing or 2001? You know, I'm not taking a position either way. I'm just wondering if, and I don't believe it's a non-issue, but I just don't know if it's there's any harm in moving forward in it.
The only issue I would see with say to that is if we adopt a change and then something comes out from the state and we have to change it again, then if a project's mid-development, it's going to cause confusion instead of just waiting and making it the same.
Commissioner Wellner is the most active practitioner in this area. I mean, what are your thoughts in this regard? And I mean, and you know, Commissioner Erstedt as well. If you have experience, anyone who has experience with this, I'd be interested to hear what your opinion is about whether to move forward or not.
My concern is it's just going to take away flexibility that we have today. I understand why they're doing it. I just don't. A lot of time. Not under this regime, but historically, a lot of things have gotten adopted in long range, and it really hasn't been clearly passed down to current planning of this is what we're trying to accomplish, and then it gets implemented by current planning, and they have their own opinions about things, and sure. There's not been a clear, and you've had conversations with Tom or whomever to try to work through this, but I'm concerned that the implementation of what you're trying to do here is going to have unintended consequences, especially with things on the horizon that could create more points of conflict.
Commissioner Erstedt, do you have any experience or insight on this in terms of whether to...
Well, when I see the next slide and the development is like a 10-lot subdivision, I think this is completely makes sense and should be in play. But when it gets down to the, if you're just going to build one more house, if say partition, and you have to give access over to the adjacent property, given the access could take away the room to put in the second house, and it seems like an undue hardship on that one owner. I think as the developments get smaller, it becomes less fair or less reasonable.
I think what I'm hearing is from two people who are particularly, you know, who work in the field, but and I've dealt with this issue in Washington County as well years ago. Having flexibility when it comes to a particular site or project or proposal is important because if you don't have that, we end up with delays and more expense, and you know, my new philosophy is if we have an affordable housing crisis and we need to increase supply, more flexibility is it should be one of the principles. Why don't the commissioners who've expressed concern about this, when we, after the public hearing, and we enter into debate on the ordinance. If you want to make a recommendation to the board of commissioners to drop this for now, I'd welcome that. So why don't we continue then on to the next issue if there is one? Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just mention Commissioner Anthony Mills joined us at 2:13. If it can, the recorder can note that. And Anthony, do you have anything?
Thank you. Well, I thought that I'd heard somebody start to ask staff if what issues might be as far as tabling this. From somebody, did I? And I was just interested to see
tabling is sort of a technical term. I mean, in Robert's rules, it's sort of like saying it's an indefinite deferment of it.
Okay, or postponing, or
postponing. And so essentially, I would say when we get into the ordinance discussion about what action we want to take for recommendation. Mm-hmm. It could be that we recommend the postponing.
But I'd like to hear what staff has to say, because if staff says, no, that's legally impossible, and we don't allow them to say that, and then we decide to postpone
staff,
or whatever.
Can staff offer any feedback to the Planning Commission about what a recommendation to defer this or postpone it would have?
So a couple of comments. I was taking notes here, and those, your comments are well received, and I appreciate them all. I would note that this was a request from current planning to include this in an ordinance this year. So it's not that we're this one, rather than long-range planning, requesting current planning to do something different. It's the other way. Current planning is requesting a change to clarify the circumstances here. And really, from my perspective, this is about managing the safety of access along arterials and collectors. Multiple access points do result in multiple conflicts, which does create additional points where there could be a safety circumstance. I don't think there's any huge rush to proceed with this kind of change, but this would be an opportunity this year to make the amendments that current planning did request and continue to safely manage our arterial and collector system. So again, I don't think it's a critical time-wise thing, but I think it's an important thing for us to move forward with at some point.
So I think the answer, Commissioner Mills, is yes, it can be. This portion of it could be deferred if the Planning Commission wishes to recommend that at the time we're and that it's not the end of the world, or it's not going to, because as Commissioner Wellner has mentioned, is that we've been managing the potential safety issues for the last X decades with the policy that's in place, with the understanding that yet we have to manage arterial access spacing. So we can debate this or consider it as we get into it. Is there anything else?
I do want to offer something up that, and
please.
And it's important to know that access is really critical for property redevelopment. So while de facto this scenario might play out without clarifying the language, we think there may be some chances, and we have more of these situations as land gets more tighter where it could show up and the language is unclear. But if you don't require the access, in this case, that adjacent property, if they came in to develop, we would say, well, you can't get it to the property to your left or your east. You're going to have to work with that property to the west or right, depending on where you think the north arrow is on here. And until they redevelop, sorry, you're not going to be able to develop because you're on an arterial. So there's just know that one way to look at it is, yeah, it could restrict things a little bit. The other is it also provides opportunities for other land to redevelop. So there's two parts of this equation. So
the adjacent property could do an interim access. They could do an access management plan to be able to take that access off the arterial. You already require this road to be connected to the neighboring property. I expect that you're going to continue to require my developments to extend road to the neighboring property. But in certain circumstances, you should really consider it on a case-by-case basis, like what I talked about earlier with the expensive house on a small piece of property. And what my concern is all of a sudden you've got this clear mandate of you have to do it every time, and it takes away your ability to be flexible on a case-by-case basis, like you guys have been for a long, 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 long time. And I understand that somebody can appeal a decision and make this a problem for you and Jackie and staff, but this question's come up in a limited number of occasions, and I'm going to ask questions about this until I know and I'm comfortable with that I'm not creating any more problems for the development projects that I'm working on and that other people are working on. So that's why I'm raising the issue. If you can show me, yeah, that you still got the opportunity to extend it through with a private street, or you still have the ability to not require that street to go through because of this set of criteria, then I'm not trying to get in the way of it, but I'm not comfortable that you're not creating a new set of rules that are more strict than what we had than what we have today. That's my concern.
Well, I think your concern is valid, and I think staff is recognizing that even though it's a current planning request, you know, we all come at things from our own needs and perspectives. Current plannings may or may not be in the interest of maybe a broader planning perspective or long-range planning perspective. They may, particularly if we have other solutions or changes that are going to be coming that are going to be related to this. So I think we can move forward, though, and decide accordingly. I appreciate Mr. Back offering the two sides of the coin on this. I would agree on that. I do have one question, just a technical one for us non-practitioners. Required access for property on the left, how is that documented? How is it demonstrated or proved or documented to the county that condition is being met? Is it a recording on the deed? Is it an access? I mean, do they have to have an access or easement agreement established with the neighboring property before the application is approved?
By required access, what I meant there was that it would be a condition of development approval.
For the property on the left?
The property on the left, the developing property.
That they would have to have, that there would need to be required access established with the property on the right.
They would need to build a road that would terminate at the edge of their property, providing opportunity for the adjacent property to take access on where the road, the new road, where it's
right,
says required access, instead of at their to the arterial or collector.
But it doesn't require this. Condition then doesn't require that the neighboring property and the developing property execute deed changes or access agreements.
It wouldn't get into that at all.
Well, if this street becomes private, then you'll have to have an easement over the top of it for access to that neighboring property. And if you have to anticipate development of that property, then you have to size this street in anticipation. But more likely than not, it'd just be a public street extending.
So, yeah, no, go ahead. It's
only because it's the only
thing. No, I
extra time.
So if this were a, if this were 3/4 acre of R5 and you could do 4 lots there, and you had this development, I mean, this property can do 4 lots there too. Potentially you could do 1 lot, 2 lot, 3 lot, 4 lot with a flagpole that came through, and these two homes would front out this way, and these two homes would front the flagpole, and they'd be able to drive out. Can
you envision? You mean a cul-de-sac?
Just a, like, there would be a private little driveway that went in back into these two houses, and
then
these two homes would face out this direction. Yeah, and with this 408 change, you could no longer do those flag lots. You would now have to build a full-blown street you have to develop this property, because you have to accommodate development of that property next door. So that's the kind of circumstance where you could have a viable project, because all I'm building is a driveway back to my two houses, and now it has to be a full-blown street because I have to anticipate the neighbor developing next door.
And it changes the character of the developing project significantly, particularly if you wanted to have it a certain scale in terms of landscaping or sidewalks or whatever. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything else to present on this? I saw we were at the summary.
Yeah, the last slide here is to conduct the public hearing and make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners. Please don't forget there's two staff recommended engrossments in Exhibit 1. And with that, that concludes our presentation.
There's two engrossments.
Yeah.
And this one we just discussed is not one of them.
Oh. I also was asked to make a couple remarks regarding the City of Wilsonville's submitted testimony.
Oh, yes, yes.
We have not, as staff, had...
Can I do a preamble on that before you comment, which is I did read the letter, and it is very direct about wanting this language added to help prevent a situation in the future. And it's language that we don't typically have in the TSP. And it came in at more than 11th hour. It was posted yesterday, I believe. And staff's, I talked to Steve about where staff was, and basically it's it needs more review to be able to consider something of this character. That said, I did talk to the planning director prior to the meeting and shared with her that I didn't think that at the timing is the problem here. I personally feel the request is a common sense, I mean, is doable, even though I don't know if there's a technical objection, but that... And I told her, I mean, I'm not telling her it's doable from county perspective, just that from a layperson's perspective, it seemed like a reasonable attempt to avoid a problem happening in the future that they've already experienced. And she understood the timing issue. That I said, you know, if this is something that's important, perhaps put it into a request for the next cycle. Their concern was they've got more applications probably that would be have a similar type of situation or impact, that there wouldn't be something on the books to clarify. And they would like, you know, as she said, is there a possibility of doing a standalone ordinance before the end of the cycle? And I said I would only restate her question to staff on that. So I guess, you know, what are you, now, if you could now respond to that Wilsonville concern.
I was just going to say we received the testimony, but have not really had a chance to fully vet and understand all of the potential implications here. Similar to the prior discussion, we have not had something that would do what Wilsonville is requesting here on the transportation plan previously. So we understand the request and are looking into what the implications could be to doing something kind of universal like this. And that's as far as I'm ready to respond today to their submittal.
No, I would add, Vice Chair Petrillo, so the letters come in. We have an obligation to address it. We don't think we have time to address it now. The board hearing has been scheduled for this ordinance already. We will have some time to address it by then, whether we'll have time to say don't do it or here's a different version of it. We still have that obligation. So in the past, when similar things like this have come up, previous planning commissions have said, you know, we recommend that the staff review the Wilsonville letter and prior to going to the board, provide a recommendation on it to the board, something like that. Because we'll do that anyway.
And I think the interest of was also having communication from staff about that. So if staff could let the planning director know what the next step is, if that's what we take, I believe what you're suggesting, Mr. Back, is the appropriate recommendation, and then you know, they can, but I think they want to know what the disposition is from today, whatever it is. Is there anything else to add on this, or do any commissioners need clarification on this? I think it's just a matter of trying to be a good partner with the jurisdiction that has a need, and I think even though it's not something that we have or have done, I think also, though, we've had a lot of Wilsonville and a couple of other jurisdictions have had more expansion and land come in, particularly with the, you know, unique urban growth boundary expansions we've had. And so we probably haven't had to address it the way, you know, I mean, there hasn't been as many requests as, you know, they view that they're having more than they would typically have in a 20-year cycle. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. But was there any other public comment besides Wilsonville and Ms. Mary Manso's comments?
Not that I'm aware of.
Relating to Ms. Manso's comments, particularly specifying transit designations, the one that really stood out to me is the Bethany to the Sunset Transit Station recommendation. And I was at a community picnic or something, event, and you know, someone hears I'm on the Planning Commission. I must have heard that twice or three times, just from ordinary citizens who say, you know, I'd like to use the light rail, but you know, why is it we don't have a connection? And so it's clearly a need. But Mr. Kelly has indicated that it's already on the Mr. Valentine as well, as it's already in the TSP. So I think other than that, then let's conclude the staff report on this and open the public hearing. And see if there's anyone in attendance from the public who is interested in testifying. Let me get my... So, officially opening the public hearing on ordinance number 851, Transportation System Plan Update, and are there any members of the public present? Not seeing any, and no one signed up. I will conclude and close the public hearing. With that formality over, we can move to make a recommendation via motion. We can discuss how we want the motion to be beforehand, or we can make a motion and amend it. I think it'd probably be easier to discuss it beforehand, how we'd like the motion to read or to be stated. So chair doesn't typically make motions or recommend how they're supposed to be, you know, the content of them. So I'll leave that to my fellow commissioners.
I would recommend the following, and let me know what you guys think, is that we recommend approval of ordinance 851 with the draft engrossments shown in exhibit one, and that we delete the amendments to the community development code relative to neighborhood circulation, and that we direct staff to review the Wilsonville letter and provide their recommendations to the board on said letter.
I second that.
Commissioner Wellner has made a motion, and Commissioner Beatty has seconded it. And I'm trying to note it here. The recommendation from the Planning Commission is recommending approval to the Board of Commissioners of Ordinance 851 with the staff recommended engrossments. That's part A. Part B would be to, I don't know how to word this, but or how, if your wording is the most appropriate, but delete the, you said neighborhood circulation element.
Strike the amendments to the community development code relative to neighborhood circulation.
Do you folks have that?
Okay. It's in the key provisions in the back of the.
Okay.
And
part C being to review the request of the city of Wilsonville for an amendment and to make a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners relative to that recommendation. Before we vote, I'd like to make a request of staff. I think sometimes I follow these issues as they make their way to the Board of Commissioners, and sometimes the Planning Commission's actions or comments or important concerns are stated accurately and clearly, and I think sometimes they're not. And particularly when we make it more complicated by, in terms of an approval, when we're adding on these things, particularly B and C, I think it will need to be explained to the board the concern or the concerns will have to be explained about item B.
The rationale.
Why is it that the Planning Commission is recommending the deletion of that? And even if staff feels differently about it or feels like they're not in agreement with the Planning Commission on the recommendation, I think it'd be important for it to be at least accurately represented so it's not setting up as sort of a straw man argument. I'm not saying you're going to. I'm just saying that's just one of my concerns sometimes as things, it's just the way sometimes the process works.
Question?
Sure, Commissioner Lockwood.
So as far as the 408 issue that we've been talking about, we would be voting on whether to delete that.
Correct.
And the rationale would be, that's what I'm trying to clarify,
well,
that it takes away flexibility and is not necessary to ensure safety.
We have a second, and this is the discussion of the motion.
Yeah.
The motion itself that will be adopted wouldn't provide the what you're
right,
what you're
that
asking,
would be
but
like a,
but for
okay.
you, but for yeah. the benefit of
right.
us as well as the staff. The rationale one is flexibility, two is, I'm looking to look to Commissioner Wellner on some of this, is with land use changes that are coming down the pike, potentially from the state and from middle housing ordinance that the county is considering, this may be premature, and then three, most of the concerns that are needing to be addressed by what we currently do have been addressed on an ad hoc basis, and there isn't an immediate crisis that has to be addressed.
Correct.
Mr. Chair.
I have no doubt that the staff could do a good job, but sometimes, even when somebody understands something, putting another person's words into coherent that another group will then understand is difficult.
It's the telephone game. I mean,
yes. I wonder if Commissioner Wellner, since he's the one proposing this, would be interested in writing a short letter to the Board of Commissioners explaining, not on behalf of the rest of us, even if we support his motion, but that way we're cutting out the middlemen where there's a risk.
There's a, you know, we're doing a formal recommendation, mm-hmm. and I would say I would say Commissioner Wellner, I would welcome, and I'm sure staff would, if Commissioner Wellner wants to write a brief summary of why he thinks the board should consider this, mm-hmm. or testify mm-hmm. at the board meeting, which may not be practical for him.
Yeah.
But if he did write something and he submitted it to staff, staff would include it in the board packet, I presume. I mean, that wouldn't be problematic, and that's a question, I guess. Is it problematic?
I think having him submit it as Commissioner Wellner isn't problematic. It's sort of like you're taking an action, and when at the board level, when they adopt an ordinance, they adopt findings, which sometimes are 27 pages. So you're not developing the findings behind your decision. You seem like you're all generally in agreement, and we kind of get that, but Commissioner Mills is right. We're not going to reflect it perfectly in your heart of hearts how you feel about this, but you know, we'll do our best to reflect the reasons why you're doing this.
Yeah, and so Commissioner Wellner, you're welcome to do so if needed.
Yeah, no, I always show up if I want to.
Yeah.
But I also think that what I'm saying is not, you guys get what I'm saying, I think. So, and it's not that, I just think I'm bringing up some thoughts that maybe they hadn't thought about before we got here.
Well, I think that is what it is. Yes,
and,
I agree.
And so it's not like we're talking about some complicated equation.
Right.
I might just decide to show up to the board meeting and
articulate.
Walk up behind Catherine and start drawing on the thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
And I should say for any of us, I've done this the chagrin sometimes of the board is, you know, I want to be sure what I was representing at the Planning Commission is being represented. And I'll go testify as an individual, a Planning Commission member, or to clarify to make my point, particularly when in a situation where staff is not in agreement with that. And I want to make the counterpoint just as a logical argument I hope.
Do you guys think it would, if after you write your stuff, I'm not sure I'll read it, but if you decide you want Matt to be there, then I'm happy to show up.
So, with that, are there any other comments before we vote on the motion? All in favor, please indicate by saying aye for the motion as stated.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay or abstain. I am saying aye as well, so it is unanimous approval of the motion to recommend as stated. Thank you for allowing us to deliberate. I think it was a useful conversation. There's things sometimes that we don't see, and they may be valid or not, but I thought we'd be in and out of here in 15 minutes, so.
Those are always the longest.
So we have, I believe the next issue is consideration of minutes from April 17th. And looking at the list, let me see, Beatty, Lockwood, Mills, Erstadt, Wellner, I think we were all in attendance. So you all can vote accordingly. I can entertain a motion to approve the minutes of April 17th.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of April 17th as written.
In a second?
I second that motion.
So Commissioner Beatty has moved and Commissioner Lockwood has seconded the approval of the minutes of April 17th. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye as well. It is approved unanimously. And if there is no objection, Actually, there is an objection. I have my own objection, which is I do have a question for whoever staff is left, which is when will the Aloha Tomorrow ordinance be filed? If anyone happens to know. It said late May in the minutes. Was it filed?
I'm not sure if it was filed, but we do plan to have it come to you on the 24th of July. So it's.
Well, I'll look on the. I'll look for the website.
Right, probably within the next 2 week period, we need to file it. Jackie, do you know?
Yes. So I have the draft. I do know for a fact that it has not been filed yet. I think we anticipate filing next week, though, somewhere around June 20th or so.
Thank you. And the same with the right-of-way ordinance. When will that be filed? I mean, just approximately, the telecommunication?
It was today, I think, right?
Right. That was scheduled to be filed today. I have not seen it yet, okay. Though.
So it's imminent.
It is. It is. Sometime this week, I would say.
So, sure. And Commissioner Beatty has a comment, a question.
Just for the record and for Susan, I will not be able to attend the June 26th or July 10th. Meetings due to military training.
Well, thank you for your service. That's the first thing. And we will carry on without you. If you do have any comments on what you see in the agenda, please feel free to share it beforehand with staff to share with us. Without any further, sure, Commissioner Wellner.
So relative to the telecommunications facilities in the right-of-way, I know that there was a separate tract for looking at process and requirements might be for a right-of-way permit. Is that, I know you can't handle those both in the same ordinance. Is that started, that second piece of it?
Sort of.
I should say that is my question as well about it. That's why I brought it up.
We had the discussion with the board on the issue paper, and they gave head nods, I believe, on that issue that it's important for us to do that work. So that's progress that we've made since we were before you. But we're not at the point right now where we have a document we can hand to you or the board and says, here's the proposed RNO. So. We certainly know the issue, and that's sort of the trade-off that one of the things you'll have to consider once it comes to you. We'll share whatever progress we have to date on it, and you know it could be a timing issue, just like your previous discussion of what's the cost and benefit of slowing down and making sure they do go on parallel tracks.
And this, the issue we're talking about is the permit approval process, correct?
Right.
Okay, just for the benefit of others who aren't following it. Is there any other,
and I know that there's FCC requirements that need to be met, and I don't intend to stand in the way of that. I'm concerned that we adopt an ordinance and haven't vetted the legal implications of conditioning right-of-way permits, and that it would be good to at least have gone through that component of it before we say yay to the ordinance piece.
And I share the concern. Permit approval in the right-of-way to me came very real today when Comcast subcontractors show up in front of my house and saying they're going to bore into my sidewalk. And I'm like, what in the world are you doing? And I said, I want to see your permit. And they showed me the permit. I'm like, you know, I was just like, I just feel like there's this whole process, and it's substantial work that's being done. And so any other comment or question? Without any objection, we're going to adjourn the meeting at 2:55 p.m. Thanks, folks.